Right. Perhaps I could suggest, given that time has gone by, we should start our meeting out of politeness to those who are here. We're still awaiting Mr. Barnier. He's supposed to be here at 15:15, but I dare say he may have other things to do. You know, things are difficult on a Monday evening in this house. But anyway, I think we should start, and I'd like to welcome you to the special meeting of the Legal Affairs Committee on this Strasbourg Monday evening. Could I ask whether anyone has any proposals regarding the agenda? Well, apparently not, so the agenda is approved as it stands. Item 2, Chair's announcements. You know the score. I don't have any announcements, so that's good. And that brings us, in that case, right on to item 3, which I'd like to tie in with numbers 4 and 5. It's a whole package. All three legislative or non-legislative proposals on the... The international agreement is non-legislative, so I mean we'll deal with all three jointly, and I would suggest that we begin by listening to the rapporteur, Bernhard Rapkay, who will speak about the regulation. Then we have the other rapporteur, and then the Cypriot Presidency, and of course the Commissioner. So Bernhard, please go ahead. Thank you very much. In the last few weeks, I asked for this special meeting to be convened to provide information. I wanted to give you some information because I will be able to attend the next few meetings of the Legal Affairs Committee over the coming weeks. The Presidency in Office has announced that today in Coreper they want to take a decision on a proposal which they have worked on, and from what I've heard, they have come back to me a little and consulted me a little on some of it, and you too in your capacity as chair of the committee. I think that it's only appropriate that we should provide some information on the subject. We can't decide on anything for now, but we need to take a look at what procedure we'd like to follow, because my report, and that's what it's about at the end of the day, it's the regulation. My report, as I say, was voted almost a year ago in the committee, so we need to take a look at how we'll deal with it procedurally. We've come up with one solution which I think is positive. It could be defended, given that the European patent as an issue is one that's been with us for about 30 years now. In the European community as well as in the European Union, it's been the subject of discussion. And the current proposal has been around for more than 10 years too. The initial proposal from the Commission was submitted more than 10 years ago, and Parliament got through the first reading very quickly, and since then it's hung around in Council for a whole decade. I'm not going to tell you about all the details, but I would just like to remind you of that, because I think that is one reason why we should say yes to the compromise now. The procedure has been long drawn out, and we really should have a unified European patent, a single European patent. So, as I say, the position is defendable, because, you know, if we didn't have that backstory, as it were, I'm not sure that I would take the same line of argument, but I do know, in this case, in fact, I've known from the beginning, that either we will get a sub-optimal result, sub-sub-sub-optimal perhaps, a compromise, or nothing at all. To put it in more negative terms, it's a poor solution, quite simply. the right, the appropriate solution would have been the one that we took in this committee just under a year ago, where we got the approval of the Presidency and Office of Council, which was then Polish, of course. So let me say once again, and I'll be saying this in the debate in plenary too, what the Council has done here, the heads of state and government, is, you know, absolutely undefendable. They have overstepped the bounds of their powers. They have no right to take action in this type of legislative procedure under the treaty. Yes, you can say that they are calling upon the legislator or asking the legislator to delete things, but they don't, you know, they can't tell us what to do. But I know the way things go in council, the big bosses have decided, and we have no alternative anymore. So the bosses have decided. I've done what I could about this, and, you know, I would like to say this in unparliamentary terms, they're not actually our bosses. So it's clear that if we can find a solution, we're bound to find only a solution that is worse than the best possible solution. Now, if I've understood rightly, and I dare say the Presidency in Office will clarify this for us, but I think I have understood, you know, because they've always come back to us and consulted us and things, but I would like to say once again that it's the current Presidency of Council, the Cypriot Presidency, that bears the least of the blame here. They were simply given a hot potato by their predecessors and had to deal with it. And the type of cooperation with this presidency, I think, has been very good. It's been very agreeable. I'd like to thank them for that. But, of course, it doesn't change my evaluation of the whole procedure. So what that means is that we've got to go back over what we had already decided on almost a year ago in the informal trilogue. If we can replace Article 6 to 8 by a reference to the international agreement. Now, that's the proposal before us, one that we rejected a year ago, by the way. And now, as I see it, we could, under the right conditions, we could take Article 180 of the treaty as the basis, as the legal basis, and at our last meeting of the committee, I mentioned three red lines. As I see it, there are two that we have stuck to, and the third we're going to have to give up on. The first one was it must be compatible with European law. Article 180 of the treaty will be the legal basis. That must not be violated. And I think that that condition has been met, although I do know that there's a lot of room for interpretation there. But taking a positive line, I would interpret it by saying that, yes, we have met the terms of Article 180. I also had a second, or rather a third, red line, and that was the rights of Parliament. And at the end of the day, we're going to have to talk about this too. Irrespective of what the solution is, at the end of the day, we must not violate the rights of Parliament. And that's, we've managed to do that in the informal talks, and in the text of the regulation we have a new Article 5A, which is to replace Article 6 to 8 with a reference to the international agreement or intergovernmental agreement. And if there are changes to that agreement, by the way, then the rights of the European Union's institutions must not be violated. And that, of course, includes the rights of this Parliament, because an intergovernmental agreement is exactly what it says on the tin. It's not EU law. It is the law, a law agreed upon by the member states, the sovereign member states among themselves. And perhaps, you know, you can work on the wording of that, because it's your initiative report that will be covering that. So thanks to that anchoring. And this brings me now to my second red line. I skipped one there, and now I'm coming back to the second one. As a result of the agreement and the reference to the agreement in the regulation, and because we're keeping this open, we can still reserve the right to take a look at this and say, yes, this has been appropriately resolved or not, and therefore Parliament's rights are more or less upheld there. I mean, it could be better, but, you know. And that brings me to the second red line, and that is the procedure in the European Court of Justice must not be called into question. That is what the European Court of Justice said in its ruling in 2009-2010. Because they said that the initial proposal would have violated EU law in some areas, and in particular with regard to the monopoly the European Court of Justice has when it comes to interpreting EU law. So, you know, that's because they went for an intergovernmental agreement. Now, that's the regulation, that's one thing. And I've given you my views on it. But whether it's all right, well, I don't know. We have to take a look at the intergovernmental agreement, and we've just received it in its current version from the presidency. And my second red line is the rights of the European Court of Justice must not be encroached upon. Let me put it this way. In the previous phase of the intergovernmental agreement, in the previous versions of it, the drafts of it, that third red line, or the second in my numbering, will be upheld. But, and I just want to say that in the final version too, the same must be true. The version that will be decided by COREPER today, that must not change. That is a test that we have got to subject this to, and it is our chair in his capacity as rapporteur who will be doing that, because as I said, we've dealt with articles 6 to 8 and we've got them into the international intergovernmental agreement through article 14, and we've simply got a reference to that now. So we've got to reserve all our rights here. We've got to talk to the people who will be putting it to the legal test for us. My idea is that our rights have been upheld, they have not been violated, but we need to look into it in the detail. And then once we, if that is true, then we can agree to the whole thing. But we've got to reserve the right to do that final verification. May I also say that on that third aspect, the rights of Parliament, that of course they must be guaranteed even in the event of a modification to the, or an amendment to the intergovernmental agreement. Because obviously when it is amended, it has to go through a whole ratification process, so that could be very complicated. You know, but we've got to keep close tabs on everything, all the threads leading all directions on this, and made sure that everything we've included in the regulation is respected. So that's my first evaluation of what we now have before us, and I'm sure we can discuss it. Thank you, Mr. Baldassare, who's the rapporteur on the second report. Thank you. I don't think there's a great deal needs to be added after Bernard's rather long report. just perhaps some ideas about the relations between the institutions, because this is a classic example of how difficulties between European institutions can, you know, give us the solutions that our business community and people at large have been waiting for 30 years. Now, we finally get approval in the Legal Affairs Committee, and then we get this rather surrealist 6 months to wait to hear from the court. Strange way of respecting the rights of the businesses involved. But anyway, we get more and more complications this time in order to meet the requirements of one of the member states and the consequent need to amend three articles. The only reason it's worth our while trying to find a solution is that uniformity in the application of the three rules contained in the regulation must be complete. We're talking about Articles 6, 7 and 8. They must be applied uniformly across all the member states. That was my main concern in all of this. And I think, my dear Bernard, that in accordance with Chair, this is not a time for a subtle legal disquisition. What we need is a political will, and we need to take a decision. If the red lines that you have explained to us so clearly and lucidly are respected, then everything is all right. The role of Parliament is respected, the competences of the court are respected, and application is uniform across all member states. Then I do think that it really is worth our while making this little additional effort and get to the end of it, trying to ensure that we have the guarantees that will enable us to close this first procedure and come up with this answer to the problems of Europe's businesses, which are going through some very difficult times. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Baldassare. I can agree with what the two previous speakers have said on this package. We've worked very, very closely together from the very beginning. Since we became responsible for this, we've now worked very, very closely, as I said, and exchanged information as regards the developments that were coming up. And I think Mr. Rapkai really summed up what we were all thinking and has spoken on all of our behalfs. Now, just a few things I'd like to point out. First of all, it's a package of legislation. So when it comes to deciding on this package in the plenary, when we need to conclude the plenary phase, we will have to be well aware of all of the aspects of the entire package. So this means we don't only need to think about the regulation, but also the agreement. And when we're looking at the technical aspects of the agreement, we're looking to conclude that by the middle of next year. This is simply due to the fact that the legal services of the various institutions, Council and Parliament, are still busy working on this. But as regards the contents, that will be decided at the latest on the 10th of December, when Council will decide on the matter. And based on what I've heard from the Presidency today, I'm sure the Presidency will comment on this later. The decision in Coreper today basically sums up the political agreement as it stands, and we're not looking to introduce further changes on the content. And if we can get a guarantee as to this content not being changed further from now on, then I think Parliament will be able to vote on the package. Now, as regards the procedure, we're no longer going to have to deal with concrete proposals here. It's not a dossier that's been forwarded to the committee. This was already in the plenary, but it was postponed. So it's simply a case of putting it back on the plenary agenda. So basically what this means for our procedure is that we work on the basis of joint amendments in order to support the compromise in the plenary. And then once all the conditions have been met, we can vote on the final text based on the final changes. I think that's what the rules of procedures would provide for. So we wouldn't have to go back to the committee. We could simply continue with the plenary stage. So that's all I wanted to point out from my side. I think the rapporteurs have already summed up the situation very clearly. I suggest that we hear first of all from the presidency, then from commission, and then we can move on to a wider discussion. And if we need further clarification, then I would invite the presidency to respond to any questions that might be raised. So let me give the floor to the council presidency first of all.
Mr. Chairman, honourable rapporteurs and members of the committee, commissioner, the Cyprus presidency is grateful for this extraordinary meeting of the Juri Committee and for the opportunity to discuss our compromise proposal adopted this morning in Coreper for the patent package. The Cyprus presidency has taken over this complex file at a critical moment. On the one hand, after months of standstill, the heads of government in June finally agreed on the seat of the Central Division, which normally should have paved the way for a rapid adoption of the whole package. On the other hand, by suggesting to delete three articles from the regulation on the unitary patent, their conclusions gave rise to a new problem, since it was clear from the beginning and the European Parliament would and could not go along with this suggestion. In this very difficult situation, the Cyprus presidency, from the beginning, tried to find a solution for a compromise. We took some time. In informal consultations with your rapporteurs and other members of the committee, as well as with member states, we tried to better understand the respective concerns with a view of addressing them in the best possible way. We now feel that we have found a solution which we hope will bridge the gap between the European Parliament and the Council and will pave the way for a final adoption of the patent package. We have tabled a proposal for a new article, Article 5, in the regulation of the unitary patent, which should replace the existing Articles 6 to 8, while at the same time the corresponding articles in the agreement on a unified patent code will be rendered applicable to the European patent with unitary effect. From our consultations with you, we have understood that members of the European Parliament feel very strongly and the regulation on the unitary patent itself needs to contain a substantive provision which ensures the uniformity of the protection and that this cannot be left entirely to the agreement on a unified patent court. This is why, in Article 5, Para 1, we propose to define the right of the patent holder to prevent third parties from acts against which the patent provides protection. We also propose to stipulate in paragraph 2 the uniformity of the protection, which means that in the national law, member states cannot provide for any provision which would undermine the uniformity of this protection. However, we think that it is not necessary to have in the regulation itself all the detail concerning the scope of the right of the patent proprietor and its limitations. This can be left to the agreement on a unified patent court. This is why we propose to to render the corresponding articles of the UPC agreement applicable to the European patent with unitary effect. At the same time, we propose to render, to refer to Article 5, para 3 of the regulation to the national law applicable to European patents with unitary effect, which in practice means a referral to the provisions of the agreement on a unified patent code. This cross-reference between the regulation on the unitary patent and the agreement on the unified patent code further strengthens the link between these two instruments, which has been created at the request of the European Parliament. I would like to recall that the Parliament wanted to make sure that the unitary patent cannot come into operation without the agreement on the unified patent code being in force. The European Parliament wanted both instruments to form a package. This has been accepted by the Council. Given this clear link, we would hope it is now also acceptable that part of the detailed provisions concerning the right of the patent proprietor and its limitations are contained in the UPC agreement. As a natural consequence of this link, we also propose to include those changes which the European Parliament wanted to include in Articles 6 to 8 of the regulation now into the corresponding articles of the agreement on the patent, on the Unified Patent Code. This concerns, in particular, an additional limitation of the right of the patent proprietor, the so-called Breeder's Privilege, which the Parliament has recently proposed. This brings me to a last point which I wanted to stress. From our consultations with members of the Parliament, the Cyprus Presidency is aware of some concern in the European Parliament that by leaving the detailed provisions concerning the scope of protection and its limitations to the UPC agreement, the European legislator could be deprived from future legislation in this field. This is not the case. The European legislator can at any moment introduce new limitations to the right of the patent holder. If the European Union adopts such instruments and introduces new limitations, member states will have to properly reflect this in the agreement on the unitary patent code. In order to make this crystal clear, we propose in Article 5, para 4, to call on the Commission to regularly evaluate the functioning of the limitations and to make appropriate proposals for EU instruments where appropriate. We also propose to further specify this in a new recital 10, which recalls that the agreement of the Unified Patent Code does not preclude the European Union's powers to adopt legislation in this field. Honourable members of this committee, the Cyprus Presidency does hope that this compromise package is acceptable to all. Like every compromise, it may not seem perfect to everybody, but we have tried very hard to meet the concerns of both the European Parliament and the Member States and to bridge the gap between them. If this compromise package is acceptable to you, it should pave the way for a rapid final adoption of the patent package in the interest of our European SMEs and of competitiveness and innovation in the European Union. And I conclude by simply reassuring you that the UPS agreement was today adopted together with the proposal on Article 5, and therefore there is no it's already done, and there is no possibility of reopening the agreement anymore. Thank you very much.
Vielen herzlichen Dank.
Well, thank you very much, Presidency. Commissioner Barnier, you have the floor.
Merci, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you very much, Chairman, and very good evening to each and every one of you. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak in this extraordinary meeting, which I deem to be of extraordinary importance. When the Parliament carried out its hearing, and I was Commissioner Designate, I talked about the importance of finding a solution to the patent problem 25 or 30 years on. So I deemed it was an essential point for competitiveness and for the economy as a whole. It was therefore I made the patent issue a priority. Let me express my thanks and refer very briefly to the red lines that Bernard Rabkai mentioned, and look at some of the legal aspects that Raffaele Baldassarre has mentioned. And I'd like to express my thanks to you, Chairman, and Bernard Rabkai, for your availability, your commitment to the whole process, throughout the process. I really don't believe that this would have been possible without your presence, and I think if you hadn't been as committed and determined, this wouldn't have been possible. And I'd like to thank also the presidency held by Cyprus for tackling the final loose ends that still needed to be tied up in June, following on from the disappointing outcome at the June Council. Let's be honest here. We reach compromises on a daily basis. We need these compromises to be dynamic. And as Mr. Rabkai said, as Mr. Baldassarre said, I personally would have preferred the original text as it had been approved, but the council decided otherwise. And if we really want to support businesses, SMEs, we need to move forward and recognize the fact that very good work has been done under the presidency held by Cyprus. Just a few pointers on the legal aspects. I think that in the current wording, the ECJ will have a final final word on the entire piece of legislation from the, and this would also apply to the translation regime, which falls within the EU competences. Now, the unitary patent is a patent that falls within the jurisdiction of the court, but will need to be interpreted by the national courts before it is forwarded to the European Court of Justice. Now, from this perspective, we feel that the text is acceptable. The second question that Bernard Rabkai threw up, does this respect Article 118? Once again, we would have wanted the original Article 6, 7 and 8 with a clear explanation of the competence, areas of competence. But the new Article 5 describes the nature of uniform protection and thereby makes it possible to manage unitary patents. Now, the third red line that you mentioned. Now, we are going through a very long process and we haven't concluded that process as the Competitiveness Council and final changes next spring. Final issue, the role of Parliament. As you said yourself, there will be a package that will bring together all of the elements. So, there you have it. This is our evaluation of the final proposal. Without wishing to hide our disappointment at the outcome of events, but following on from those events, we have been able to work constructively with you and with the Cypriot presidency. So finally, we might ask ourselves, what does this change? Is it a step forward? Is it progress? And will it change the everyday life of businesses who need competitive environment? And I myself have been working on this with you for more than a year and a half, and I will say very clearly, yes, it is, because the European Patent Office will be involved in this, and the patent applicant will have the option of applying for a unitary patent, and this is a major step forward for businesses. The translation regime will be simple. The application will be submitted in one language, and the deliberations will be processed in three languages, not using human translations, but also using automatic translations, which will not incur any additional costs. So all the other languages will be made available. So we're going to have a 2,380 euro cost associated on average with the patent, very significant reduction in the cost, which will make a huge difference for businesses and allow them to become more competitive. And a final reason why I think this is a good thing is that this will open up the way to a single jurisdiction, that is to say the Unified Patent Court. So, Chairman, without sounding self-congratulatory or enthusiastic, let me simply reassure you as to the legal guarantees. Without going into the details, I can confirm that this is a step forward on the basis of the work done by the Council Presidency, which will put an end to 35 years of waiting here in the European Union, which was being held back and was being deprived of its competitive edge.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you very much, Commissioner. Mrs. Wikström is first.
Thank you very much, Chair. And first of all, a warm thank you to all you three rapporteurs that have worked so hard on this package. It has been a long and complicated procedure, even taking to account only the past 2 years and leaving the almost 35 years before to the side. I would also like to thank the Cyprus Presidency for the stamina not to give up, but to work hard on the patent package, finally finding a compromise that everyone seems to be happy with and can live with. And of course, I congratulate you, Commissioner Barnier, for being the commissioner finishing this after so many, many years. So today we are to discuss the issue of the now famous Article 6, 7, and 8, and the new proposal for Article 5 to replace them. I think this seems like a very good solution. Frankly, for myself, this does not change a whole lot, as I have, as colleagues will recall, have asked for deletion of Article 6, 7, and 8 all along, and continue to be convinced that it is still possible to have a regulation under Article 118. I would like to remind you that this position was also supported by a large number of academics, judges, and lawyers from the beginning. I fully respect that a majority among us have not shared this conviction and have wanted a clarification to further strengthen the legal basis. I am happy that through hard work, we seem to have a proposal tonight that everyone can live with and that fulfills the demand. I think the initial proposal is now even better thanks to this. And I believe that we should now move forward in the interest of citizens, researchers and entrepreneurs to finally adopt this proposal already in December in the plenary. As a final remark, I would like to once again underline that the door is still open for the participation of Spain and Italy, and that I sincerely hope that both these countries shall join the European Patent Project rather sooner than later. And finally, colleagues, tonight we should, in my view, be happy that we have made a difference for European citizens. They have waited for so long, and finally we are almost there. And I think It is not that often that we have a reason to be proud, but tonight is really one of those nights. Thank you very much.
Dankeschön, Frau Kollegin Lichtenberger, bitte.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lichtenberger. Thank you very much. In this, I'm afraid I can't sing from the same hymn sheet as the others. I still have a lot of questions that are left open and unanswered. One is, last time after the vote in plenary, we had a mandate. That mandate included three paragraphs, which have now been replaced by a simple reference to an agreement, a convention, whose text I don't know. And I think that's pretty much giving someone carte blanche. We discussed this. We said we would next year, we would keep it all under control. Now, I've got a problem with this, and let me say this quite openly, because it will have the following consequences. What will Council learn from this procedure? It will learn that the European Parliament comes along with a mandate, you delete three key paragraphs, and at the end of the day, Parliament says, yes, of course, we're in favour, oh, it's taken so long, we'll just do anything you want. What do you think is going to happen in the future now? Do you think Council's going to take anything that we put before them in the form of a mandate seriously in future, my dear fellow members of Parliament? Forget it. We should do what we want. That's what they'll say. Now, let me just clarify that in case anyone doesn't understand. You can write to anybody you want. We don't care. And I'm just saying there's an Austrian to a German. Now, the consequence is that whenever we have to deal with intergovernmental agreements, Council quite simply ignores anything we say. It's done it before. In the future, we will have key provisions, perhaps in recital 27, just a reference. But what is this all about at the end of the day? It's about legal certainty. And it's small businesses or small inventors that are they're of the best served by this because they don't have the money for long legal proceedings. So it's when we're talking about a lot of money, and here we could be talking about large amounts at stake. And that's why we need the legal certainty, and this does not give us legal certainty. If we all have our doubts here, I have doubts. I don't have anything in writing to tell me that all of this will work. We've all got, we're just handing over all our possibilities to the European Patent Office. Now, of course, we have a former commissioner there, a former high-ranking civil servant from the commission, but that's not a guarantee. Of course, there's revolving doors operating here, as everyone knows who's worked on the staff regulations. But anyway, my problem is I don't have anything in writing. I don't have a written opinion. Why not? Because everybody has their doubts. If a rapporteur quite frankly describes it as suboptimal, I agree. And at the end of the day, if you want a European patent, well, we will have that. But it won't be what we need. It won't give us the legal certainty that we need. And if we do that, then I think we're making a mistake. One of the key questions for me is, where's the certainty that the whole European Court of Justice will continue to exist? We don't have that. We have other big weaknesses too. So I really have a problem with, giving this carte blanche where we don't have the exact form of words. The big danger here that we still have is endless proceedings, endless legal proceedings. you know, it's the same thing as with a pregnancy, where there's a great dangers for the child. Now, I'm afraid, you know, that this child, which has been gestating for a long time, more than 9 months now, and I don't think it's coming out right, you know, surely it's worth it to try to negotiate something that's a little bit more than just a compromise on this very important issue. We've just got to trust that we're getting what we want without anything in writing. We've had opinions from lawyers, from legal specialists, saying to us that this European Parliament has not improved the situation at all. But we wanted to do that. That's what we wanted to do, make an improvement. So, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I really have very serious doubts. If you just let it go through here, rubber stamp it, what will be the effect on future issues in council, future dossiers, on the that's the first point, and secondly, I've got doubts about the substance, and thirdly, I've got doubts because I think that this is an issue that is worth our coming up with a really good European patent that will stand up to the tests of time. So where are our legal service? They're saying, oh, it's okay. But come on, in writing. You know, not in some sort of sub-clause in a sentence. That's not enough for such an important issue. Thank you, Ms. Carey.
Chairman, thank you. The point's already been made. Quite clearly, this issue is something that has been a very long time coming. In fact, if I'm calculating this correctly, it's been 35 years, which means it's actually older than many of the people in this room. And that speaks volumes in itself. With negotiations, you always reach a point where there is a need for pragmatism if you want to deliver a result. If one's view in negotiations is simply to have negotiations for negotiations' sake, then I can tell you 3 generations from now, we can continue having negotiations. But we have to deal with the issue that is in front of us. And all of us parliamentarians, those of us who are active in our own areas and wider than that, know the conditions that people are having to operate in at this moment in time. And the overall framework that we as a union have been preaching to our citizens about is that we want you to innovate, we want you to grow, we want to be a knowledge-based economy. And yet, despite the fact that we have it available to us at this very moment in time to grasp, there is still voices, albeit a minority of voices, in this Parliament saying, let this opportunity go. Well, I refuse to let that opportunity go. I'm not going to. And the reason is this. When one looks at the United States of America, what is the big difference between them and us? And where is their growth coming from today? It is coming from their innovative sectors. Then go and look to see what China is doing today. Look at what India is doing today. And look at the overall uniform protections they are providing people within their own borders. And we can't do that. It's just absolutely incredible. It's beyond belief. And you know, the one thing our companies are crying out for is certainty. And when you have the sort of environment that we have got at the moment, and you are able to provide any level of certainty to those people who are, at the end of the day, building us, one cannot place a value on that delivery for them. So that's what we're actually doing here today, colleagues. We've got to keep this in mind. Our rapporteurs have done an absolutely A-rate job of delivering this. There are 2 paths we could take. One is a very technical one. We can navel gaze. We can say, all right, we're going to go away and start rooting around at this all over again. or we can be absolutely pragmatic. What has happened, we had a very open discussion and argument regarding Articles 6 and 8. People's positions were absolutely clear, including mine. And we have now, within the framework ambit that we as a parliament, we as a committee had, a solution to those arguments and other things as well. Now, I know Commissioner Barnier said he didn't want to sound self-congratulatory and enthusiastic. Well, Commissioner, let me sound self-congratulatory and enthusiastic on your behalf, because I genuinely do recognise the huge strides that we are making here. For me, without wanting to lower the importance that is attached to this issue, quite simply, I think any colleagues who fail to support what is being put forward here are really being negligent in their duties to Europe as a whole. And the only one question I have left for the Commissioner is this. Where's the champagne?
Thank you. Well, I think we'll be smart on this and keep the champagne until everything's over. We've had so many surprises over the years that really we should wait until everything has been settled. I dare say the Commissioner sees it differently. Mr. Bassett.
Yes, dear Chairman, dear friends. We've heard from Commissioner Barnier that he admires the tenacity of the three rapporteurs, my friend Bernard, Chairman Lehner, and Mr. Baldassarre. Of course, their tenacity is admirable. But you've also got to think about the tenacity that we have shown in terms of those of us who disagree with this result. Mrs. Lichtenberger mentioned this, because we've had this pregnancy now that's gone on for over 9 months, and it should be of a gynecological concern to us all. Reading the French classics, I remember how Montaigne was wrong when it came to pregnancies. In the 16th century, it was known how long pregnancies lasted. Yes, that was true, but the big disappointment of Montaigne was that he actually made a mistake in his essays in terms of the empirical view of the situation. And I think, in a sense, we have a 35-year-long pregnancy on our hands here, and Montaigne wouldn't have made that same mistake. And we've got this painful 35-year pregnancy on our hands, though. And we think that with tenacity, we also need to have flexibility and rapprochement. Because as the Commissioner said very well, we haven't got all Member States on board here. And I think that my country, Spain, at least, is one country that should be credited with flexibility, but also tenacity. And I just want to say something from the point of view of a lawyer. Chairman Lehner has recalled the timelines of this whole journey and the timetabling for it. Now, I remember that at a debate we've got to make sure, or I recall that during debates on this, we've got to make sure that we have the possibility to discuss and amend and modify. And we've also got to make sure that if we have an agreement that goes to plenary, then we've got to make sure that members of Parliament have the right to table amendments to this agreement. And that has got to be explicitly clear. And I just want to say now that if that isn't possible, then that would be a terribly regrettable circumstance.
Yes, of course you have that right. Mr. Axel Foss. Thank you very much. First of all, could I say that this long preparatory phase that's brought us to where we are today has seen a lot of developments down the years. You know, we've had the internal market, the euro, eastward enlargement, the Lisbon Treaty, a European Charter of Fundamental Rights. We've got an existential crisis, but we still don't have a single European patent. And that, you know, is a good thing. It's a good thing that we should have that within reach now. I quite understand, Ms. Lichtenberger, that you're dissatisfied, you know, when you have to vote on things that you don't know everything about down to the last detail. But I think that Mr. Rapkay, the rapporteur, made it clear that there are, he has his red lines, which he has determined specifically, and that this idea of a single European patent as such, with the appropriate effect in the member states, that is an added value in itself, and that we should support for the sake of the internal market. And over and above that, in the ongoing crisis, if we introduce any sort of restrictions to our ability to innovate, that could be a bad thing for Europe's economy. So I think that this is a good step forward to help us get out of the present situation.
Signor Presidente, il mio gruppo...
Thank you. My group agrees. I'd also like to just claim a little bit of something positive for my group and also for the Italians here in this committee right from the start. We approved this. We have our own language and we love it, the language of Dante, but not for patents. But we did not hold things up for that reason, but it's still a very sensitive issue, because I agree with those who raised the problem, the fact that Europe lacks a single patent. We are paying for that every day, and for reasons that have been said, I mean, I'm not going to repeat them, but our main goal as we try to make progress with the integration of Europe is that for a single market, a single patent is essential. As a previous speaker said, we are now living in an economy of innovation, of knowledge, and if we fall behind, we will pay for it. You know, we are going to do ourselves harm. We have gone on for so long. It's really time we did something, and I wouldn't hesitate. In legal terms, even the aesthetics of the legal side of it, I understand the misgivings, because, you know, the one that's been found is a bit imaginative, the solution that's been found is a bit imaginative, because it introduces into community law, or EU law, a component of international law through this intergovernmental agreement. And if we were writing a thesis about this at a university, we would have difficulties with it, there's no doubt. But if we're only ever to follow the academic theoretical line in Europe, we will never achieve anything. What we have to do is make quantum leaps forward. We've got to find a little bit of boldness in our legal invention, if you like. If the economic and political aspects are important, then it's time to do something. I don't think it's a legal mess. I think it's a solution. And if we can have the text that was approved this morning by Coreper in Article 14C, no, 14F, right to prevent the use of the invention, and 14G and 14H, limitation of the effects of payment, those are taken direct from Parliament's proposal. In other words, it means that you can use an instrument of international private law which it justifies what the European Parliament and therefore the European institutions in general have done. And I agree with what Bernhard said. Bernhard, we perhaps should, from what he said, perhaps Ms. Lichtenberger can take a little more trust. You know, we have the Competitiveness Council, and we're in the linguistic phase. We said that we would not accept this. We would not accept anything that was carte blanche. We had a condition, a sine qua non requirement. So what the agreement must be on the text we've all agreed on, and therefore, because that's what we have, I think we can be quite happy with it. Article 118, and the fact that the Court of Justice if you set up an external court, and we were the ones that wanted this in the first place, to create harmony in the legal, in the community legal order. So I am less pessimistic if I look at it from this perspective. Now, to conclude, Bernhard, I agree with Mr. Lehner. You'd wait till the end before you drink the champagne, because you never know what can happen. There might be a deus ex machina. Our highest leaders, the council, in other words, could still do something different here, but whether they do it in, you know, London, or whether they do it in Germany or France or Austria or whatever, they take action in an area which they do not have any powers. Everything is possible, but not because it's council. On patents, we've had a continuous deus ex machinas over years and years. So it was only right to convene this extraordinary meeting. I almost always agree with Eva. This time, you know, I'm afraid I don't. And I'm, you know, I'm very pleased, despite the affection I have for you, I'm very pleased this evening that you're in a minority. And I'd like to pay tribute to everyone who's worked on this. The Cypriot Presidency gave us a very nice surprise. We weren't expecting this today. Commissioner Barnier, you know, we were all a bit taken aback by the text at the beginning with a reference to three community languages. But anyway, we've got through it. It's worked. And we, thanks to our courage, have reached a successful conclusion. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Castex.
Yes, well, I won't be as enthusiastic as my colleague, Mr. Bedlinger. And I think I also disagree with him on another point. I don't think the council ministers are the big bosses of the European Union. Now, I have a question in terms of the procedure at the moment and in terms of how that procedure is going to finish. Nothing's agreed until everything is agreed in a negotiation. So my question is the following. We have tried to win time here after the vote in the jury committee when we took all of this to the trialogue, but this speeded up procedure, this accelerated procedure, has to be underpinned by trust. But today we feel that council has broken that trust, and just, you know, in one sleight of hand it has actually deleted three articles from the agreement. Now this morning council has come up with the three articles, and it's come up with a rewording of these three articles, a new text basically. And then you're saying also that what was decided this morning in COREPER is no longer open to negotiation, it's the final meeting. And to my mind, we've got a massive problem in terms of parliamentary procedure here, because we haven't actually gone to the end of the road with this. We haven't had a vote in plenary yet. We haven't had the first or the second reading procedures, because we try to speed things up instead. So I think that this agreement that you're proposing has to be reconsidered by the jury committee. We've got to look at it again here, and as Mr. Hidalgo said, it's got to be open to amendments. If that's not the case, I have difficulty seeing how we could accept this unilateral agreement that's been imposed on us without negotiation by Council. So, from my point of view, this is really problematic, and I'm sorry to rain on the parade and not to be enthusiastic about this, but, you know, if you're talking about glasses of champagne, it's going to be a bitter glass or to swallow.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Gracias, Presidente.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Now, in my interventions in the past, I've always been in favour of this idea of the patent, and I wanted us to be able to conclude on this as soon as possible. And I also appreciate the work being done by the Commissioner and all our rapporteurs on this. Having said that, in the past, we have also been speaking out and saying that we weren't sure about the legal certainty of this whole subject. And we, as the Spanish state and also some members of the Italian representation here, decided to have recourse on this and take action on this. But it seems that Council have decided that this is the last political discussion on this. So if that's the case, this is my swan song on this subject. And I think that there are issues here. We've gone from one language to three. We've gone from one seat of the court to three courts. And where we had a definition, actually, I don't think we're going to have a definition, but in terms of reaching the idea of one patent, we've got one of 25, not 27, because two member states have decided to follow a different path. So that's what we've got. But I think this is a bit complicated. And to Mrs. Wikström, I would say that for the Spaniards, at least, as far as I'm concerned, we're not really going to be rushing through that open door, because it's going to be very difficult for me to explain all of this to my electorate in terms of the numbers of seats, the numbers of languages, and so on. We said that we were going to defend the Spanish line in terms of everything being done in English. We've ceded a great deal, but now this morning everything has changed. But, you know, uncertainty prevails. Now, I don't want to be negligent or missing out on this opportunity, as Mr. Karam inferred, but I think there are doubts raised here, legal doubts and all kinds of doubts that have to be dealt with first before we go ahead with this, and that's why we've got to table a whole series of amendments. And I'm not sure if we will be able to table amendments. I hope somebody is going to be able to explain all of this to me, particularly the legal service here in Parliament, because I don't see how this is going to work out procedurally. And I don't, you know, deliberately want to make this difficult, but we hope that the door will continue to be open to the Spaniards and the Italians, and we also, of course, want to say that the door is open to other countries who do also feel doubts about this, politically or legally speaking. They might want to join our ranks, perhaps, in the future. And, of course, we're open to that prospect as well. We want to accept other countries that have real suspicions in terms of how this is working out, in terms of the 25 countries here. Let's be clear about that. We're talking about Council and Member States and so on, but we're actually only at 25, not 27. Thank you.
Danke, Herr Kollege.
Thank you, Mr. Rapke. Got myself on the list as well. Thank you. Now, the Lisbon Treaty says if you can't get agreement on all 27 when you require unanimity, then there is the procedure of enhanced cooperation. And you can do it with 25 out of 27. That's just the way it is. It's in the treaty. So where's the problem with that? Second comment. It would be fine, even if it's late in the evening, if people would listen to you know, to what we say. to my colleague Mr. Lopez, all I can say is that the whole issue of languages and the seat of the Patent Court is simply not under debate here. We voted on the languages here in the committee, and Council did exactly as we voted in the committee. So to say Council wants to make a proposal and we can't do anything with it, that's a bit strange. Council decided what we already had decided and what we negotiated as well a year ago. Then the question of the three seats. We've already heard something about that today. I said, yes, we can be pleased that it's only three member states that demanded the seat. We could have had eight. We'd have ended up with eight courts. But, you know, that's the question of Council. That's an executive matter. We, you know, they decide just the way they did, but it's an executive issue. It is not a legislative issue. And perhaps to just make it clearer now, my impression, you know, we've had the ideas from Council, we've had everything put into debate, you know. Now, look, we put something to Council. We did that. And when I'm saying we, I mean the rapporteur, but of course there's always one rapporteur. I can tell you that last week I managed to make more changes in the Council proposal, and I said that's the only version of this that I will agree to. Now, of course, following the procedure, Corepair has something to say about that, but when I say that's the only version I'll accept as rapporteur or recommend, then Council doesn't have much alternative but to say this is it, you know. So what are we doing here? Here we are endlessly battling over this, you know, on the question of carte blanche. Again, let me just say, please listen. I said, you know, and I would recommend this, it was up to me, we vote on this once and for all. When Council, not just Corepair, but in the full configuration, the Competitiveness Council has voted on it, and they'll do that on Monday the 9th, and only then will we vote in plenary. In other words, right to the last second, we have control, right up to the last minute. Nothing's decided until everything's been decided, that's true. And I know that there are some delegations in Council, in Corepair, you know, that have had real problems with this. Because we said to them for the first time, look, you are not above us. You know, we are the people that come up with the proposals, not you. Now, of course, you can say we should have stuck to our old position. But may I just say to Ms. Lichtenberger, you can't complain about it. You can't blame the patent lawyers for this. All they want is exactly what Council wanted. The Council did exactly what those people wanted. They wanted Article 6 deleted. And that's what the Council wanted too. You know, they just drew a line through it, and not just one. So, I'm being careful here. The people who wanted to put 6, 7 and 8 in are going to be very surprised when the European Court of Justice gets its work done faster now with the present form than if we had gone for 6, 7 and 8. They will get it through quicker. So, you know, the rapporteur appointed here, we have really fought hard for this. We negotiated really hard line. You know, they've got their experience, we've got ours too. And we called upon the presidency in office to confirm that. Well, we don't actually need to, because we know it was like that. We were very tough in our negotiations. There was just one issue that we said, okay, we'll have to find a slightly different solution. You know, we could have said, right, we stick to Article 6, 7 and 8, then we would simply have been postponing it all, and a whole lot of people would be sorry about that, a whole lot, especially the ones who wanted 6, 7 and 8, the patent lawyers. They'd be pleased about that. But we said, as Rafael Baldassarre said, we want to make a contribution so that we can get this. And we said, right, the best solution cannot be achieved. We simply cannot get it through. So let's take a step backward, even two steps backward, so that we can get a good run up and get a big long jump, and let's jump. And if you take a look at it, you'll see that we've made a pretty good jump, pretty high jump. You know, yes, there are other things I might have wanted, but this is politics, isn't it? We've done a good job here, we've got in a good jump, and, you know, we don't have to hide from anything. We got that through, nobody else. Thank you. Just let me add a couple of sentences. Institutionally, the situation was extremely difficult. You know, we had a first reading agreement, and the council then, all of a sudden, started to poke its nose into an area that it has no business in. It wanted to decide on the seat of the court, and that is a legislative issue. But in addition to that, it took action in the regulation, where we had already settled matters by means of an exchange of letters, and we simply couldn't just go back to the trilogue in that situation. That was a basic violation of interinstitutional agreements and simply could not be accepted by Parliament. Nonetheless, you do have to be, in issues like this, very pragmatic, and so informally, as rapporteur, we went to the Presidency of Council and Commission and spoke to them. We had lots and lots of individual meetings with individual governments, and the end result was that we managed to get through what we wanted. I can confirm what Mr. Rapkai said. At the end of the day, we had a proposal on the table which we found basically acceptable after thorough examination. So, at the end of the day, what happened is exactly what Mr. Rapkai said. We have a final version, or obviously we have the right to check it, but it's now before us, and it's a proposal for a regulation, and to make it perfectly clear, I don't want to vote for any other than this one. And the message from today to Council, as I see it, is that any further changes to the text will be unacceptable. This agreement, as it now stands before us on the table, is not to be changed anymore. And that's how we make an agreement on this package. So there's to be no more changes, and that's the condition for us to vote for it. And if, you know, Council has completed its formal procedures, but it has the final version, and then it will go to plenary and can be voted in plenary. In response to what Ms. Lichterberger said, I'm not really surprised at what you said. You didn't reject this because of the absence of Article 6, 7 and 8. You rejected it before when we had 6, 7 and 8. That was the Greens' position. They were against it as such. Yes, but the amendments made by Council were not what determined the Green group's position. You know, yes? No, but that's the way it went. Yes, go ahead, Ms. Lichtenberger.
Yes. Well, let me just set something right. Our rejection of this was because we wanted a better, more sustainable and genuine patent regime for Europe. I'm quite used to working with majorities, even when the majority does not share my view. I could have just sat back today and said, go on and do whatever you like. I wasn't critical just for the sake of it. No, I've been trying to work constructively and try to point out potential pitfalls for the future because I still care about it. I'm not happy to just settle into an opposition role. I am interested in a patent regime that works and that's functional. And my comments were pointing out the weaknesses, and now with the deletion of 6 to 8, the weaknesses, the existing weaknesses, became even more dangerous. And yes, you were right, that procedure was really what tipped the balance for me, because the agreement was further dissolved, and I think there are potential negative consequences here that I needed to point out. But if you're being told that when you voted one way on something at some point, then you're not allowed to go back on that decision at a future point, well, then we'd have to discuss this. Because, well, I'm happy to work constructively even when there is a majority against my own position. Well, just to clarify that, I did not say that you weren't allowed to speak out, but I didn't accept your arguments as plausible. The next speaker, please.
I have asked for the floor a bit earlier on, but now I can very safely say that I have been fully covered both by your last intervention and by the intervention of Rapporteur Rapkay. I would simply once again like to reassure you that we have worked honestly in order to bridge the gaps and the differences between the Council and the European Parliament. We think that we have put on the table, after long discussions with you, a text which is solid. We consider that we are very close to an agreement. We are very close to an agreement, and we simply cannot afford losing this opportunity once again. We owe that to Europe and to our enterprises. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Dankeschön.
Thank you. Commissioner, go ahead.
Le président,
Chairman, I'm afraid I will have to leave you to speak in the plenary on social entrepreneurships, but let me thank you for welcoming me here together with the presidency. I'd like to thank Mr. Masip Hidalgo, Mr. Voss, Mr. Bellinger for their support. Mrs. Castex, I will say to you, we're not satisfied with everything, and I've said we would have preferred the original text with the clarity that it provided for, but we were faced with the decision of the European Council, heads of government, who blocked the process. Why did I thank the Cypriot presidency? Well, they've worked in an intelligent way, not on their own, but we worked together with them, they worked with the two rapporteurs, and I will say to you, Mrs. Castex, that the things that were discussed today in Coreper, and I was interested to note your reaction compared to Mr. Bellinger's reaction. There were some who complained that they were being presented with a text, and they complained because they were being told that this was the only wording that Parliament would accept. So I think the Presidency has done some very important work, and we've tried to contribute to that effort, because really we're in the final straight now. And that's why there were complaints in Coreper today, because they were being told that any other wording would not be accepted by Parliament. And this is why we need to work on the intergovernmental agreement, look at the legal guarantees that you are seeking, Mrs. Lichtenberger. But I think it's been a long road, and we need to end up with this patent at the end of this long journey. And if we don't get anything at the end of this, then we will be backtracking 30 years, and it will have been, as Mr. Karim said, looking at everything that's going on elsewhere in the world, I've got some rather interesting figures with regard to patents. 224,000 patents there on the other side of the Atlantic, and for us, well, it's four times less than that. The figure is much smaller, and then for 1.2 billion in China, they've got 172,000 patents being filed. And that's got nothing to do with whether things are being invented here or not. It's simply that patents are not being applied for, they're not being filed. And what this means is that we have problems of counterfeiting with all the negative consequences for health and safety. And these counterfeit goods are flooding our market, the interior market. So now, Mr. Lina, Chairman Lina, we do hope that this package will be adopted by the end of your mandate, before 2014, before July 2014, and I think it will be a very good thing. And I can assure you that there will be no discrimination whatsoever. That's very clear, that's spelled out. There will be no discrimination vis-a-vis Spain or Italy. And Mr. Baldassarre was speaking out in favour of the general European interest, and I can reassure him that there will be no discrimination against Spain or Italy when it comes to their companies wishing to protect their own inventions whilst they remain outside the system. So without wishing to enter into further debate, let me just say final words of thanks. Well, thank you very much. I think we can conclude our discussions here. We will proceed as I've described. Those groups which support the agreement will table the relevant amendments in plenary, and we look forward to the decision of Council on the 10th. Thank you.